This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Human nature and Buddha nature are two seemingly parallel, entwined concepts that we struggle to come to terms with in the course of our practice. When we're told at the outset that life is suffering, we seem to be given a defining characteristic of human nature. And when we're told that there is a cause and end of suffering, that end entails following an eightfold path, our inclination is to assume that at the end of that eightfold path will be something called Buddha nature, that we will then have managed to achieve to somehow sit on top of, replace, or complement our human nature. Buddha nature is, I think, often misunderstood as an innate capacity for enlightenment. Whereas I think a more appropriate understanding is that Buddha nature is the qualities of interconnection and impermanence that are already possessed by all beings and all things. That Buddha nature is the way things already are. It's a side of things or a perspective on things that we typically do not see or do not wish to see, attributing to things in ourselves a permanence and an autonomy or a separateness that at some level is unreal. Well, hold your questions till later. Now, one of the things we can say that's happens at the as the result of following the Eightfold Path you would have release the Kraken.
Sorry. Give him a bone.
Sorry.
Anyway, one of the things that I suppose we think happens as a result of following the Eightfold Path is that we're living a life in accordance with the reality of impermanence and interconnection, and that this in some way is connected to the relief of the suffering that had been declared to be our nature. Now, the question, though, arises, what does a life that recognizes impermanence and interconnection look like? See, is it the highly regulated life of a monastic who recognizes these truths by having no possessions and no home and no attachments, personal attachments? Does he stay in accord with the underlying the nature of all those things by living in a very particular way? Does our understanding of impermanence, interconnection, manifest in some direct way as compassion? Do we want to see that the realization of that leads to a life like Mother Teresa's, that's not self-centered, that's completely other-directed? We don't have particular images of living that kind of life as the expression of enlightenment in classical Buddhism, although Avalokiteshvara is said as a result of her wisdom to be the embodiment of compassion, that insight and compassion are intimately connected. But what does that look like? Or a whole other kind of possibility that basically emerges in Chinese Zen is that the enlightened person is a person of freedom and non-attachment like Kanshan. And there you have much more the picture of enlightenment as the natural man. Chop wood, carry water, live a simple life in nature, be free, unfettered, and here it's spontaneously write nature poems rather than spontaneously take care of the sick and the dying. Right, there's a different sense of what naturally flows out of a person as a result of their insight. And it's not necessarily that one or the other is true, but what we have are multiple pictures of what our natural or freed, enlightened, liberated state is supposed to entail or look like. Does it require continual practice and actually regimented organization in order to keep us free? Right? Is the Vinaya a set of very strict rules that define, protect, and enable our freedom, right? See, this is a conundrum or a dialectic here that we're going to see reflected over and over again in the study group with the thinkers Berlin discusses, in this relation of freedom to structure, freedom to rules of society. And I hope we can see how relevant they are to the kinds of questions that occur in defining what is a life of practice. because the Vinaya is very specifically a very strict set of rules that are designed to enable us to be free, right? That's their inherent idea and inherent seeming contradiction, right? What these different thinkers, when they examine the notion of freedom, keep coming up against is different definitions of human nature. And nowadays, the very idea of a single, universal, ahistorical, cross-cultural human nature is in great disrepute, right? It is a kind of a centralism that most people repudiate. But we do have to examine what we think are the basic characteristics of a good life, what we call flourishing, what we call happiness or fulfillment, and what are the obstacles to those things? Are those obstacles primarily internal or primarily external? You can say that one of the things that divides religious philosophers and political philosophers is the religious thinkers tend to locate the obstacles internally in a built-in contradiction in human nature, whether they call that original sin or craving and attachment or desire. There's something inherent in who we are that's the source of our problem. Political philosophers tend to think of freedom in terms of outside restrictions. And the issue has to do then whether you're submitting to the rule of a monarch, or are you able democratically to decide on the form of society you live in, or is your are all these political questions in some way subsumed into economic questions, and that it is your class and form of life and labor or owning a property that is going to define who you are and what the freedoms or constrictions in your life are going to be. I mean, all these questions are arguments about the cause and end of suffering, right? Where it's located and what will relieve it. But in whether you locate the problem inside or outside, there's also this human nature question about what kind of person is it that we're dealing with. Is our nature intrinsically fallen in this kind of internal model? Is who we are defined by desire or by reason, right? There's very little in Buddhism that suggests that the cultivation of reason is going to be the source of our liberation. Yet this was philosophically a core idea from going back to Socrates and then the Stoics, and is the mainstay of the Enlightenment thinkers that Berlin is going to talk about. And there, one of the ways that we are unfree is that we are entangled in a social system of privilege and hierarchy that is held together by religious superstition, and that there's a conspiracy essentially between church and state to keep people thinking that they need a kind of regulation, right? That their nature is intrinsically violent or sinful, and God has ordained a kind of order to society that goes along with the order of the universe, that puts rulers and priests in charge of sinful people who could not be trusted to run their own lives, right? And so a big part of where the Enlightenment notion of freedom begins is the notion that we can replace religious faith and religious forms with reason and humanism, that we're going to find the truth about human nature empirically and looking at how people actually live their lives rather than finding it through revelation and some religious doctrine about original sin. So all these notions about what is human nature, what is freedom or liberation, these are all running through the discourse, whether we're talking about Buddhism or the philosophers of the Enlightenment and the counter-Enlightenment. So, as all this unfolds in the discussion group, I hope we will be able to keep bringing it back to how our own sense of practice is organized and how it relates to issues we're used to encountering in Buddhism, and not see this as simply a separate, split-off philosophical entertainment.